Bantam Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing presents Star Wars, Starfighters of Adumar, Book 9 of the X-Wing series, by Aaron Alston. Wedge Antilles, packed as though he were still an active pilot and not a general of Starfleet Command. Everything went into one shapeless bag chosen for its ideal fit within the cargo compartment of an X-Wing fighter. He sealed the bag and looked around his quarters. They were spacious, as befitted a general of the New Republic, and well situated high in a Coruscant skyscraper. But they weren't home. Home was a family-owned refueling station, destroyed half his life ago with his parents still aboard, and nothing had ever come to replace it. He slung his bag over his shoulder. While on leave, maybe he'd be able to see in the faces and hear in the words of those he visited what it was that had turned their housing into their homes. Maybe... His door chimed. Aaron Kraken, head of New Republic Intelligence, entered.
General Antilles, I have an assignment for you.
I'm on leave. It's already begun. Kraken shook his head.
The following information is for your ears only. You're not to discuss it outside these quarters until you reach your rendezvous point. The world of Adumar is on the near edge of wild space. It was colonized as long as 10,000 years ago by a coalition of peoples who had staged a rebellion against the Old Republic, been defeated, and been spared, so long as they went far away and never caused any more trouble.
Wedge just stared. Perhaps if he demonstrated continued indifference, the general would go away.
Anyway, Kraken said, they were forgotten by the Old Republic. There is no mention of them in Imperial archives either. We were fortunate that one of our deep space scouts stumbled across them when returning from a mapping mission. Adumar is heavily industrialized, and our analysts suggest that it would be a simple matter to convert a portion of their industry over to the production of proton torpedoes.
He paused.
General, how would you like it if the New Republic's X-Wings never had to face a shortage of proton torpedoes again?
Wedge suppressed a whistle. It was proton torpedoes that gave some starfighters the punch necessary to damage or even destroy capital ships.
That would be helpful. So, send a diplomatic mission and work things out with them. Ah, that's the trouble.
Kraken rubbed his hands together.
The people of Adumar have no respect for career politicians, but they love fighter pilots, a case of hero worship that spans their whole culture. And so they'll talk with a diplomat, but only if he's also a pilot. Our best.
Wedge sighed. I'm no diplomat.
We'll assign you an advisor, a career diplomat already on station at Adumar named Darpin. By the terms by which the Adumari are allowing our diplomatic mission, you'll be accompanied by three other pilots, your choice, a crew of aides, and one ship. You'll be in command of the Allegiance, an Imperial-class star destroyer.
I remember her.
Well then.
Kraken took a data card from a pocket and held it out.
Your orders. You and the pilots you choose will rendezvous with Allegiance at the coordinates provided here.
Wedge offered Kraken nothing but a steady stare. I need this leave, General. Find someone else. Kraken's face flushed.
You're coming dangerously close to insubordination, General.
No, General. Wedge took the data card from Kraken's hand. I'm not your subordinate. And what I'm coming dangerously close to is violence. Perhaps you'd better leave. Kraken stood there a moment, then turned away. As he passed through the door, he said, "Pack your dress uniform, General." Then he was gone.
Thank you.
Wedge's X-Wing and the three snub fighters accompanying him dropped out of hyperspace at the same instant. Unfamiliar stars surrounded them. But within visual range was something Wedge recognized. The white triangular form of an Imperial-class Star Destroyer. His sensor unit tagged it immediately as Allegiance, his expected rendezvous.
Red flight, he said. We are cleared to land.
As he and his fellows sat down, Wedge saw the main doorway into the starfighter bay open upward and a crowd of people enter. Among them were a man in a fleet command captain's uniform, the usual complement of junior officers and guards, and what looked like a woman with two heads, one of them shining silver. Wedge descended his access ladder and extended his hand toward the highest-ranking officer.
Captain Salaman.
The captain followed Wedge's informal fashion of greeting and shook his hand.
Welcome aboard, General Antilles. Allow me to introduce you to my senior officers.
Then the captain gestured to the two-headed woman.
And the mission documentarian, Halas Saper.
I'm so happy to meet the most famous pilot of Starfighter Command.
Wedge could finally give her his full attention. She was a tall woman with long brown hair worn in a braid. He could not read her eyes as they were concealed behind goggles darkened almost to opacity. And on her right shoulder, held on a bracket affixed to her clothing, was the silver head of a protocol droid.
Thank you, he said. I couldn't help noticing that you have two heads.
She smiled.
This is White Cap, my holorecording unit. I put them together from a ruined protocol droid and a standard holocam. I added memory and some basic conversational circuitry and programming. He looks wherever I look. The goggles have sensors that track my eye movement and records whatever I see.
Wedge returned his attention to Captain Salaban.
Allow me, in turn, to introduce you to my pilots. I present Colonel Tycho Selku, leader of Rogue Squadron.
Tycho offered the ship captain a salute. He was a lean man, blonde, graying in dignified fashion at the temples, with handsome features and an aristocrat's bearing. The perfection of his looks might have made him appear severe, even cruel, in earlier years, but the beatings life had handed him had weathered him in spirit, if not in form. Now one looked in his eyes and saw the humanity and the signs of distant pain there.
And this is Major Wes Janson. And if you're not aware of his exploits, I'm sure he'll be delighted to give you the whole story.
Janson shot Wedge a cool look as he shook the ship captain's hand.
Good to be here.
He turned to the documentarian.
Oh, and Halas, I'm better known for my breathtaking looks than my fighting skills, so don't forget that this is my good side.
Wedge suppressed a snort. Janson's self-promotion came out of a desire to entertain, but he was as good-looking as he suggested. His hair was a rich brown, and his merry features were preternaturally youthful. He was now in his 30s, but could pass for 10 years younger.
And Major Derek Clivian, Wedge concluded.
The fourth pilot leaned in for a handshake. He was lean, with dark hair and a face best suited to wearing mournful expressions. He, too, turned to the documentarian.
Everyone calls me Hobby, he said.
Wedge resisted the urge to look into the eyes of the recording unit. It was best to train himself now to ignore it, but he couldn't help but wonder how he'd look beside his more colorful subordinate pilots. He gave an internal shrug, hoping he didn't suffer as much as he feared in comparison with extroverts like Janson.
I'd appreciate it, Wedge said, if we could get a temporary paint job on the X-Wings. Red flight 1, 2, 3, 4.
He pointed to himself, Tycho, Janson, and Hobby in turn.
A white base, but Rogue Squadron reds for the striping. No unit patch.
Salaban nodded.
Easily done.
So, Wedge said,
what's first on our agenda?
Salaban's expression suggested that the question was not a welcome one.
Settling in, I'm afraid, sir. There won't be a briefing until you land on planet.
Wedge forced a smile for the holocam.
Well, just another challenge, then. Let's see those quarters.
Wedge was still fuming days later when Allegiance dropped out of hyperspace at the edges of the Adumar system. There was such a thing, of course, as overplanning, but this was the polar opposite.
He didn't know any more now about the people of Adumar than when he received the data card from Kraken. As he sat in his X-Wing running through his pre-flight checklist, he had available to him only a set of coordinates on the planet's surface.
Red Flight, this is Allegiance. Our final leg terminates in 1 minute.
The pilots launched and descended toward the planet's surface. Soon they could recognize cities with skyscrapers, cultivated fields, untouched forests, broad lakes and rivers. It was a pretty world.
Leader, two. We have company.
Wedge checked his sensor board. It showed two red blips paralleling their course. As he watched, another two blips began rising from below on an identical course. The sensors designated them unknown type.
Heads up, Red Flight, Wedge said. This may be trouble.
His comm unit came alive with transmissions, disjointed phrases crowding one another out.
Red Flight, the flight knife approaching your position. One cashier challenges Wedge Antilles. Answer!
Scramble Red Flight's frequency, Wedge said. Now people other than Red Flight listening in would hear nothing but computer-mangled transmissions.
S-foils to attack position.
Leader, three. We can outrun them.
No, three. If this culture really is as pilot-happy as we were told, taking the most sensible course out of here might cost me credibility I need. This could be just a test of nerve.
At three clicks, Wedge said, break by pairs. And the enemy fired. Wedge saw eight flares, two from each oncoming fighter, as the enemy launched missiles. Wedge whipped to starboard and then instantly began to bring himself back in line with his enemies again. The maneuver forced an overshoot by the missiles. A split second later, his targeting brackets crossed over one of the oncoming aircraft. Wedge squeezed his yoke trigger and saw his lasers leap out. Sensors registered an explosion behind him, and three targets beginning tight turns back in his direction. Wedge switched to the general comm frequency.
Red Flight to enemy fighters. Indicate your surrender now by descending to the planet's surface.
No!
The enemy pilot's voice was strained, a little high in pitch.
Every half march until is or die!
Wedge fired and saw his quad-linked lasers shred the craft ahead of him, punching through the fuselage directly behind the cockpit. Tycho's shot was more surgical. The fighter craft, still intact, rolled lazily to port and began an uncontrolled plummet. Wedge checked his sensor board. It was free of enemy craft. He brought his group slowly back around on course.
Red Flight to Adumar Central Control. What was that all about?
Red Flight, this is Cartan Bladrum. Congratulations on first stops. Our apologies for the inconvenience. Please resume the original course.
He switched to Red Flight's scramble frequency. Any of you getting any of that?
Leader, three. They don't sound as though this was part of the planned celebrations.
That's my read also, three. Let's resume our planned course, but keep your eyes open and your senses optimal.
Moments later, it was before them, the biggest city they'd seen so far. As they got closer, they could see that it was a riot of colors, each building painted differently from the ones next to it. And every building seemed to have a broad balcony, some stretching out over the street, almost meeting others from across the way. Red Flight's course took them abruptly out from the city's streets and over a plaza packed with people. And at the boundaries of the plaza were erected display screens, each showing a different moving two-dimensional image of Wedge Antilles and the X-Wings under his command. Images of battles from throughout his career. Wedge almost jerked in surprise. On one screen were in-the-trench shots from the original Death Star, from the viewpoint of an X-Wing camera mount. On another, the huge naval engagement in space above the sanctuary moon of Endor. All were recordings that had to have been provided to the Adumari by the New Republic. The navicomputer indicated that the plaza was the terminus of their trip. Wedge descended. Already parked on the landing zone was the shuttle from the Allegiant. When his canopy opened, he was deafened by the roar from the crowd. Tycho, Jansen, and Hobby joined him in moments, and Wedge spotted another individual headed their way from the direction of the stage.
He was dressed in New Republic clothing cut similar to a military uniform, but without rank or unit designations. He held out a hand to Wedge.
I'm Toma Darpin, New Republic Diplomatic Corps. I'm your liaison to the people of Adenar.
Good to have one, Wedge said. What's expected of us here?
Not much. A short speech for the assembly.
Tomer gestured at the crowd. After the speech, we settle you into quarters, give you some orientation, and you can dress for the ball. That's where all the politicking and introducing really takes place.
Wedge nodded. We don't meet the planetary president or representative here?
Tomer shook his head.
No, the Imperator of Kartan offers you considerable honor by not showing up.
Wedge said.
Imperator is what, planetary president?
Well, here it's an inherited rather than elected title, Tomer said. But he has the support of the people through demonstrations of his piloting leadership during his youth. And his absence here means that he doesn't steal any of the attention the crowd would otherwise pay you.
He gestured toward the steps leading up to the stage.
After you.
Jansen fell in step behind Wedge.
Hey, boss, do you have a speech ready?
No.
So, you're gonna sound like a complete idiot, right?
Wedge turned to offer him a smile.
Once, maybe. But since I'm made general and have to do this all the time, I've developed the Antilles four-step instant speech.
Jansen gave him a dubious look.
This I have to hear.
Once on the stage, Wedge headed to its center and raised his hand with a theatricality that wasn't really part of his nature, just a byproduct of the numerous public relations tours he'd taken after the death of Emperor Palpatine. The crowd roar increased, but he waved it down. Step one, remind them who everyone is in case they've forgotten.
People of Adumar, I am Wedge Antilles, and it's my pleasure to meet you at last.
His words blasted out from speakers set up on four strategically positioned metal poles around the plaza. Step two, remind them what you're here for.
And as a representative of the New Republic, I'm pleased to be present at this historic meeting of our great people.
Step three, something personal, so they'll know you're paying attention. Wedge gestured out at the flat display panels.
I must admit, I find this display very heartwarming. I'll have to find out if I can replicate it on the walls of my quarters back home.
Some laughter mixed in with the cheering. Step four, wrap it up before you make a fool of yourself.
I expect to have more to say once I've settled in. But for now, thank you for this warm welcome.
He waved again and took a step back as if abandoning a lectern. The crowd's cheers continued. His pilots advanced to flank him and joined in waving, and Wedge took some time to look at the assemblage. They were men, women, and children, all ages, consistently light-complected, though their hair ranged throughout the color spectrum. Wedge suspected that many hues were artificial in origin. There was a wide variance in the color and cut of their clothing, but some consistencies as well. Males and many females wore tights and close-fitting boots in black, under long shirts with flowing sleeves. Belts were common, usually narrow, single-color loops with no buckle or attachment showing. And weapons were everywhere. From most of those belts hung sheathed long blades, short blades, pistols of some variety. Wedge could see few in the audience who were not armed in some way. Even the children had knives. It occurred to him belatedly that he could see no security detail on duty around this stage.
Toma, I suppose I'm not concerned if you're not, but what are you using for security here?
Tomer's answer was tinged with amusement.
Why, the crowd.
Ah, and what if they wanted to cause a problem?
Others would stop them. For instance, let's say someone jumped on the stage with the intent of killing you.
He'd give you fair warning, of course, and choice of weapons.
Of course,
Wedge repeated. Then you could choose to kill him yourself or refuse him. If you refused, he should withdraw, but might theoretically press the issue if he was stupid.
That's where security issues become a trifle more important, Wedge said.
If he pressed the issue, which is a grave breach of etiquette...
Wedge heard Jansen snort in amusement.
then someone in the crowd would probably shoot him dead just to please you.
Now, stop worrying, Wedge.
Jansen's grin was infectious.
It's obvious they adore you.
A processional vehicle, a giant flatbed that rode the ground on wheels, conveyed Redflight and Tomer from the plaza. Their conveyance pulled up before one of the taller and more richly appointed buildings they'd seen, and minutes later Tomer led the four pilots into a suite of rooms on an upper floor. He pointed to four of the doorways.
Dead chambers.
He gestured to a bank of drapes.
Your balcony. It's a pilot's balcony, by the way. Extra broad and reinforced, and with nothing for a level or two above, so you can land your starfighters on it. You can move your X-wings here at your leisure, or I can get a member of the support crew to do it.
We'll move them, Wedge said. What's next?
Get cleaned up and get into your dress uniforms. Your court dinner with the Praetor at his palace is in about 2 hours.
Ugh, Jansen said. Hobby made an unhappy face.
They're not reacting to the idea of meeting the Praetor, Tycho was quick to explain. It's the dress uniform.
Tomer nodded.
If you're looking for alternatives, I'm certain that the court would consider it a sign of honor if you wore local dress.
Yes, 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 Jansen said.
Wedge repressed a smile. That's a possibility. If you'd be so kind as to send up some examples? Tomer nodded.
One snap of my fingers and you'll have your very own fashion show.
They were four very different men as they walked toward the outer court of the royal residence of Kartan. Wedge had chosen green for most of his outfit, boots, hose, belt, and had selected a tunic in a creamy off-white. Tycho's tunic was a material that shimmered and changed color as it moved, depending on the angle at which one viewed it. Hobby's boots, tights, and belt were a basic blue, his tunic a glorious red, but every hem of every garment was decorated with trim of eye-hurting yellow, making it almost a dizzying experience to look at him. Jansen had chosen what Wedge had first misunderstood as a minimalist approach, but then he capped it off with a hooded cloak that made up for the rest of his outfit's lack of drama. Nearly floor-length, it was a curtain of nebular red-purple, shot through with crystalline stars that blinked on and off with internal light. Jansen carried his service blaster on his right hip, but also carried a new weapon. On his belt at his left hip was a sheath, carrying the Adumari blast sword.
Preferred weapon for settling personal disputes in Kartan, as Tomer had explained.
It looked much like a vibroblade, the length of a man's arm, but the hilt was protected by a curved metal guard. The tip of the weapon was a small flared nozzle. When the device was switched on, the tip would fire off something like a blaster bolt whenever it contacted a solid object.
So, it's like a blaster you need to hit someone with, Jansen had said. I have to have one.
Accompanied by Tomer, the pilots paused at the arched entryway to a large ballroom designated the Royal Outer Court.
You'll have to surrender your sidearms to the guards, of course, Tomer said.
He stopped Jansen's action of unsheathing his blast sword.
No, you can take that in. Blast swords are fit for polite society. It's only blasters they object to.
Tomer led the pilot straight to a knot of people that held Hallis's attention. As they approached, Wedge could see that at its center was one man, unusually tall, with a close-trimmed white beard and alert, active eyes. As the pilots neared, he looked at Tomer and asked in a raspy but well-controlled voice,
"What have you brought me, oh speaker for distant rollouts?"
He spoke with an accent in which many vowels sounded like short, flat A's. Tomer offered a smile.
Pekelik Kateldon, Praetor of Kartan, hero of Lemeral Ridge, master of the Golden Yoke, I beg you allow me to present to you these four pilots of the New Republic Starfighter Command.
You are welcome to Kartan,
the Praetor said to Wedge. I look forward to hearing your words and seeing your displays of skill. But first, I have a present for the four of you.
Into the open space surrounding the Praetor stepped a young woman. She was not tall, but walked with the confident gait of someone a head taller than anyone in the crowd, despite the fact that she was a year or two from full adulthood. Her black hair was in a long braid drawn over her shoulder, and her eyes were a dark blue that seemed almost purple in the dim light of the chamber.
"This young lady," the Perator said, "is the most recent winner of the Catan Grand Championship. With that victory comes certain obligations and prerogatives. Pilots, I present you Charisse Kehanadi. I know that you have the most informed Thomas Darpin to give you outlook upon Catan, but Charisse will serve you as native guide throughout your stay."
Wedge gave the Perator a slight bow.
"Thank you, sir."
"I am honored to serve," Charisse said.
She stared at Wedge with disconcerting intensity, but Wedge could detect no animosity in her expression.
"If General Antilles wishes diversion during the evening, I have a show to put on. A non-title from some runny-nosed lordling."
The Perator returned his attention to Wedge.
"Tonight," he said, "is an informal night. Tomorrow is soon enough to begin the tedious affairs of discussion and negotiations, no?"
He offered another smile, then moved away. Wedge said,
"Tomer, a couple of questions. If he's the ruling representative of all of Adumar, why is he simply introduced as the Perator of Catan?"
"He is the heir to the throne of Catan. Catan is his nation. The concept of a single world government is somewhat new here."
"Oh."
Wedge turned toward the high beam intensity of Charisse's stare.
"What's the best way to conduct ourselves at this gathering?"
Charisse smiled and gestured.
"There are long tables along those walls where there's food. You can just walk by and take what you choose. The pilots and nobles here would be most happy if you would wander, meet them, tell them of your exploits."
It took them nearly 30 minutes to approach the food. In that time, they ran across group after group of admirers. By the time they reached the buffet-style tables, all four pilots had an appetite and eagerly went after the foods ready there, despite their unfamiliar appearance.
"So, Charisse," Wedge said, "what can you tell us about Adumari fighters?"
"The pilots or the machines?"
"I meant the machines."
"The Blade 32, she said. "Preeminent atmospheric superiority fighter, though the 32 Alpha is equipped for space flights, and the 32 Beta also has what you call a hyperdrive."
She sounded as though she were reciting from a specifications chart.
"It's a single pilot craft in most configurations, with three main weapon systems."
Someone bumped into Wedge from behind. The other diner half turned toward him, saying,
"My apologies."
"No offense taken," Wedge said. Then froze. The other diner's accent was clipped, precise. Imperial. Despite the man's garments, he was dressed in Cartan's splendor, much as Wedge was. Wedge knew he was no Adumari. His face was burned into Wedge's memory from numerous Rogue Squadron mission briefings.
"General Turfaneer," Wedge said.
The most famous surviving pilot of the Empire, the man who had inherited command of the 181st Imperial Fighter Group from Baron Fell upon that pilot's defection to the New Republic, stared at him in disbelief.
"Wedge Antilles," he said.
Wedge could see calculations going on behind Fenir's eyes. They probably matched what Wedge himself was thinking. Best known New Republic pilot, best known Imperial pilot. We're here at the same time, so Adumar can compare us, can choose which of two options suits them better. Fenir lifted his hand from his belt and extended it to Wedge.
"It seems we're here for the same reason."
Wedge set his spoon down and shook the man's hand.
"I suspect so. You'll understand if I don't wish you luck."
"Likewise." Fenir turned away and raised his hand in a come-along gesture. Three other men in his vicinity followed as he departed. Wedge turned his attention to his native guide.
"Charisse, did you know that man was here and who he was?"
She nodded, sober.
"I did. My Perator instructed me to say nothing until you two encountered one another. They had an arrival ceremony much like yours, at the same time as yours, on the far side of Cartan.
Wedge paused for a moment. Cherise, please withdraw a few steps.
She did, looking distressed, and Wedge leaned toward his pilots and Tomer.
The Adamari have set us up. They're going to play us against the Empire to see who can offer the best arrangement.
Tomer's face was nearly white with shock. They pulled this off without even our intelligence people knowing. He shrugged, unhappy. I'll transmit them a request for further instructions.
You do that, Wedge said. But until we get further orders, we'll do just as we intended. Socialize, play the visiting dignitaries, make good impressions.
Major Wedge Antilles of Starfleet Command, Tomer said. Allow me to introduce the Cartan Minister of Notification, Ulyaf Kunthos.
For the 40th or 80th time that night, Wedge offered the minimal bow and handshake required by the situation. Then, over the minister's shoulder, at a table at the outskirts of the crowd, he saw her. She was seated alone and dressed in the height of Cartan finery. Her dark blue dress, a sheath from neck to ankle, was fitted to her slender form, except where its sleeves flared out in Adumari fashion, and was sprinkled with gems that glinted white like stars against a backdrop of space. Her hair, a dark blonde, was piled high on her head. She was beautiful, but it was not her beauty that made Wedge feel as though he'd taken a punch in the gut. He knew her. He knew her name. He knew the planetary system where she'd been born, the same as his, Corellia. Yet when she glanced at him, there was no hint of recognition in her eyes. Wedge forced himself to return his attention to the minister.
Could you excuse me a moment? I must speak to my pilots.
What's up?
Tycho asked. I'm going to allow Cherise to put on whatever show it was she was talking about. I'm going to pay a lot of attention to it.
Tycho offered a confused frown.
Why?
Because the hangers-on seem mostly to be concentrating on me right now. If I do this, it'll give you some freedom to act.
Wedge turned to Jansen.
Wes, at exactly 90 degrees to your right, about 12 meters, there's a table with a woman at it.
Oh, good.
I want you to wait until the crowd's attention is on Cherise's demonstration, then approach her.
Jansen smiled.
Thanks, Wedge, for looking after me. You know, you're one of the most considerate commanders.
Wes, she's a Yella Wissiri.
Jansen's eyes widened.
What?
Yella Wissiri was a New Republic intelligence agent, a former partner and longtime friend of Rogue Squadron member Corin Horn. She had been very helpful to the Rogues during the taking of Coruscant from the Empire. Her husband, Dirik, an unwilling traitor brainwashed by Imperial Intelligence head Isine Isard, had died during those events. Corin and Wedge had both helped her through the trying times to follow, and Wedge had eventually grown interested in her, until things had conspired to separate them. His career, hers, ultimately, his relationship with a female named Quizux. After that began, he'd almost never run into Iella.
If it's really her, Wedge continued, she's probably here on an intelligence assignment. Don't do anything to blow her cover, but suggest to her that your commander finds her interesting and wants to see her. I'd like to know what she's up to.
Wedge spoke to Cherise, and she spoke to some sort of functionary, and moments later, that man drew a blast sword and waved it over his head. The tip traced a glowing yellow line, so his motion created a shining circle above him. This attracted the attention of the crowd, and conversation quelled.
"We have a non-title ground challenge," he said. "Lord Pilot Depir Kafanax challenges Cartan ground champion Cherise Kahanadi vengeance for her defeat of Jaipir Kafanax at the last championship."
There was applause from the crowd, which withdrew from the speaker, forming an open circle in the middle of the chamber. Wedge turned to Tomer.
Wait, I thought she was going to put on some sort of show or demonstration.
Tomer's expression was serious.
She is.
To entertain you, she offered to accept a combat challenge. As the ground champion, she receives a lot of them, and you told her to go ahead.
I didn't know that's what she meant. I'm putting a stop to this.
Don't. Tomer's voice was a plea. The challenge was accepted.
All you can do now is embarrass Charisse and look like an idiot. You'll be demonstrating weakness. Charisse took off her belt, handing it to the man who'd made the announcement, and drew her blast sword and knife.
Into the circle stepped a young man. He was perhaps a year or two older than Charisse, lean and graceful. He drew a blast sword and knife.
Honor our death,
the announcer said. Dapier began to circle Charisse. She waited for only a quarter circuit before attacking, a step forward followed by a thrust from her blast sword. Then it was on in full, Dapier catching her assault on his blade and attempting a riposte, Charisse blocking that move with the guard on her dagger and returning a full extension thrust that caused Dapier to leap back. Every motion of the swords was accompanied by an arc of light from their tips. Every impact of a sword tip hitting a weapon guard or blade was accompanied by the sharp crack of energy emission.
It's a very pretty sort of competition, Tomer said.
Wedge glared. You mean it's a very decorative way to get killed?
Tomer shrugged. This is their planet, Wedge. Their way of life. It's for me to understand it, not to try to change it. Charisse, backing away from an especially aggressive advance, caught Dapier's blast sword blade centimeters below the tip with her dagger. She swung it out of line and brought her own blast sword point to bear in a single, beautifully fluid gesture. Dapier tried to check his forward motion, but couldn't. His body arced away from her blade, but he ran upon it anyway. There was a sharp crack, a shriek of pain, and he was thrown to the floor. He lay there writhing, a blackened patch on his tunic at the center of his chest, smoke rising from it. Charisse, barely winded, set her dagger on the floor. She turned to Wedge, then extended her hand toward him, palm up. A moment later, she turned it, palm down.
You get to choose, Tomer whispered. Palm up means she spares him. Palm down means she kills him.
Palm up will suggest excessive sentimentality on your part, not something the Adumari hope to see in a fighter pilot.
Wedge put on his sternest face, his offended officer face, and stepped out into the open ring. He moved to stand over Dapier, who writhed in obvious agony, each of his breaths emerging as a moan. Wedge studied him critically for several seconds, then raised his gaze to Charisse's. He spoke loudly enough for all to hear.
This boy needs to learn to handle pain, so that when he does die, he does not embarrass his family.
He held out his hand, palm up.
Charisse shrugged, not apparently bothered. Some applause broke out from the audience and some murmuring, but Wedge could see the Parator nod agreeably. And suddenly all the courtiers around the ruler were applauding, and the applause spread from there to the rest of the crowd. Wedge returned to his place in the audience.
A good solution,
Tomer said, his voice barely audible over the crowd.
Credible.
Jansen appeared beside Wedge. News, he said.
The New Republic pilots, accompanied by Tomer Darpin, were on foot in the streets of the city of Kartan, returning to their residence. Tomer caught sight of Wedge's expression.
What's this news Jansen brings us?
Pilot news, Wedge said. Results of some red flight betting. And rather than compromise myself with the diplomatic corps by letting you know just how badly I lost, I'm going to ask you to go on ahead. We'll be along to our quarters after a while.
Tomer frowned, obviously trying to figure out how to phrase a refusal, then shrugged. Contact me by comlink if you need me. He disappeared into pedestrian traffic.
It's Iella, all right, Jansen said.
And she did want to talk to you. In the plaza where we landed at midnight tomorrow.
You have to make sure that you're not being shadowed. You can't compromise her cover identity.
Which is? She's some sort of computer slicer. Hired a while back to develop programs to translate an interface between Kartan computers and the ones used by us and the Imperials.
to find a while back, Wedge said.
Jansen shrugged.
I'm not sure. At least several weeks, possibly several months.
Wedge looked among his pilots.
There's something very odd going on here. I had the impression from General Kraken that a mapping ship accidentally discovered this planet, which had been cut off from the rest of galactic civilization for thousands of years, a short time ago. Immediately afterward, the New Republic was supposed to have dispatched a diplomatic delegation, which immediately resulted in our being sent here. Quick, quick, quick. But now, I find that the Adamari people have hyperdrives. They even have some hyperdrive-equipped fighters. They've brought in specialists to link up their computer systems with ours. They've contrived to bring in pilots from the Empire at the same time we're here. But do you want to bet that we haven't been summoned chiefly because they love pilots? We've been brought here to duel with our opposite numbers.
That's worse than that, Hobby said. I found out that Adamar doesn't even have a world government. The Perator of Kartan doesn't represent the whole world. It looks as though Kartan is the biggest of a large number of nations, and it controls several other nations besides. So, they could set up trade treaties, that sort of thing, for Kartan, but they couldn't negotiate to bring all of Adamar into the New Republic.
You're right, Wedge said. It was worse than I thought.
Jansen grinned.
Oh, it's even worse than that. Charisse is sweet on you.
Wedge felt his shoulders sag.
Tell me you're kidding.
Sorry, Chief. Do you see the way she looks at you? And she gave you the decision on her challenge duel to kill or not to kill. They say that's a really big thing here. As subtle as flowers and sweets.
What's our strategy, Tycho asked, in dealing with all these serpentine politics?
Wedge straightened.
Play dumb for now. Let everyone think we believe everything they've told us, and find out what we can on our own.
Hobby, I want you to screen our quarters for listening devices. Tycho, Wes, I want you to visit Allegiance tonight. I'll wager every credit I'm carrying that there's an Imperial capital ship orbiting Adumar opposite our ship. And I don't want Allegiance taken off guard if there's trouble.
The next morning, Wedge led Red Flight in a dive toward the trees, keeping a careful eye on the unfamiliar range meter. The cockpit of the Blade 32 was unfamiliar to him. It wouldn't do to get himself and his pilots killed because he wasn't completely at home with the controls. He checked his sensor board, or light board, the screen with the green wireframe grid the Adamari called a light bounce system, and saw that Tycho, Jansen, and Hobby were still tucked in tight. Off in the distance, their escort of four Kartan fighters was still in formation. The light board beeped at him. It showed an incoming flight of a half dozen blades, four advanced, two in the rear. Wedge's communication system buzzed.
Hurl, General Antilles! The Lords of Dismay, Flatnerf, issues a challenge!
Wedge sighed. He was already well familiar with some of the Adumari pilot terminology, such as the use of flight knife for squadron. For the sixth time since Red Flight had commenced this familiarization run, he switched over to general frequency and said,
Antilles here. Denied.
Another time, then. Confusion to your enemies. Farewell.
They love you, Wedge.
That was Jansen's voice.
This is the only planet where everyone who loves me also wants to kill me, Wedge said. Let's head back to the hangar.
Minutes later, they had landed at Giltella Air Base and had been rejoined by Charisse.
Did you enjoy the blades? She asked.
Yes, we did, Wedge said, and led the way toward the wheeled contrivance that would carry them back into the city. Very hearty fighter craft.
She nodded, happy.
There is none better, and it is obvious that you've learned to master it very swiftly. And the Imperial fighters have as well. They accepted a challenge today and shot down four members of Blood on the Flowers, Flatnef.
Shot down?
Wedge frowned.
How many survived?
One, she said. Ejected, badly wounded. He'll have some scars to brag about.
Wedge slowed his pace.
Tell me, Charisse,
Are all your challenges live-fire exercises, or do you ever use simulators?
Her smile faded. What's a simulator?
A device that simulates what you see and feel when you're in a fighter's cockpit, so you can get in a lot of training without risking valuable machinery, or even more valuable pilots.
Well, in other countries, pilots sometimes duel with weakened lasers, matched with laser receptors, and with missiles that have weakened charges that create a large pigment cloud so they don't have to kill one another.
But in Kartan, all your pilot duels are live fire?
Charisse nodded.
What would it mean if I agreed to a duel but insisted on using simulated weapons?
Her face went slack, the expression Wedge had come to recognize as meaning she was thinking hard. Finally she said,
I'm not sure. Either you would lose honor, or the use of simulated weapons would gain in honor.
If I did it again and again and won every time?
I have to think that simulations would gain in honor.
Interesting.
Wedge paused.
Charisse, with all your talents and your obvious respect for pilots, why aren't you a pilot yourself?
He saw a little hesitation in her expression.
It's not something I feel shame over.
Her miserable expression suggested otherwise.
But I can't learn to fly. When I go up in aircraft, even when I'm on a high balcony, I become dizzy.
Vertigo. So, you concentrated on the blast sword instead.
She nodded.